Let's now go to the story over the weekend, the Middle East. Everyone really sitting on the edge of their seats as to what happens next after Iran launched a large-scale drone and missile attack at Israel in retaliation for a suspected Israeli strike on an Iranian diplomatic complex in Syria. Israel's promised a significant response, and Iran has countered by promising a reciprocal response to that response. And so we wait and see what happens next. Sebastian Usher is the BBC's Middle East analyst, editor and reporter. I think you're not long back from Jerusalem, Sebastian. Welcome. Thanks for your time.
Yes, I left just a day before this all kicked off again. I mean, by then it was already clear from what we were hearing that the Iranian response was going to be pretty big and it was going to come soon. I mean, I think that there was a fair amount of warning that Iran gave through various channels to players in the region in an effort, I guess, to still keep what they did within some bounds. I mean, obviously, it was an escalation, the suspected Israeli attack on Damascus 2 weeks ago, killing a senior Iranian general, six others. And I think even more importantly, because it was part of the diplomatic compound of Iran, Iran took that as being a direct hit on its territory. So its response was, from the start, even with all the rhetoric we're used to from Iran's leaders, it looked like it was going to be followed through and it was going to strike Israeli territory. The question was, would it be an attack that actually caused damage and casualties to Israel? And it didn't. Now, the question is, is that something that was kind of built into Iran's response? Did Iran want it to be that way so it wouldn't, you know, as I say, escalate things to such a degree that all-out war would become almost inevitable between Israel and Iran? Or is it they did what they could and Israel's defenses are so strong and so sophisticated in the air, and they're also backed by their allies, the US in particular. And also the failure. I mean, I was just reading a US report suggesting that about half of the missiles, the drones that Iran fired failed. So, you know, around 50% were heading towards Israel, and virtually all of those, 99%, according to Israel, were shot down. So the damage that was done in Israel, one military installation. There's a big crater that the IDF posted, but no serious damage there. And sadly, a young girl has been badly wounded by shrapnel and her life is still in danger, but that's it. So as you were saying in your introduction there, everyone's waiting to see, and the ball really is in Israel's court because it could go several ways. It could take this as it saw off this major threat, this major attack from Iran. It didn't suffer any major damage. So it could essentially hit back at Iran in enough of a way to show that it's responding seriously, but also not to cause anything in Iran that would lead to a further escalation from their perspective. That's one possibility. Or it could be that the Israeli government, the Israeli war cabinet, the Israeli people believe that this was an intention to cause major damage, major casualties in Israel. And the intention is what matters, even if its execution wasn't successful, and that therefore they will respond very, very hard.
Things can also go wrong when you have these kinds of communications. One thinks all the way back to the Cuba Missile Crisis and one leader trying to infer interpret what the other is thinking and doing, and then things can go wrong, and worse, bad actors can seize the moment to help them go wrong, right? Or people with different interests, shall we say. So there's no question that the concern around the moment is valid.
Absolutely.
Given what has been said so far, the ball currently in Benjamin Netanyahu's court, right? And the statement that has come out of Israel, and just to repeat what that statement is, a significant response, quote unquote. So what could that be?
That's one statement that has been made, and that was made quite soon after the attack happened. I mean, we've had several statements since, which are slightly more nuanced. I mean, we've had members of a war cabinet essentially say that Israel will take its time over this and it wants to build an alliance. I mean, I think that part of an opportunity that the Israeli government, and I think Netanyahu himself, has sensed here is to reframe what has been happening in the past 6 months. As we've been seeing, particularly in the last few weeks, the international image of Israel has become increasingly tarnished because of the huge casualties that there have been in Gaza due to its military campaign against Hamas. And, you know, what's most serious for Israel in this is that its key ally, its most powerful ally, the US, has begun to turn on Israel in a way that we really haven't seen for a very long time. And President Biden, who is a decades-long true friend of Israel, has changed his tune and was putting pressure on Netanyahu. And Israel was being portrayed as the bad guy in this pretty much universally, and the pressure building on Israel over what was happening in Gaza, which was clearly something that Netanyahu and members of his cabinet were uncomfortable with and felt infringed on their ability to take the action they believed is necessary to achieve their aim, which, you know, they've said time and time again is to eradicate Hamas. So what's happened over the weekend is that what Iran has done, that was in response to almost certainly a suspected Israeli attack, which was in itself an escalation, it's responded to that, but it has changed the equation, the dynamics, the diplomatic equation, shall we say, in which we're now seeing and hearing from all of Israel's Western allies that they are giving again full-hearted support to Israel in a way that they did immediately after October 7th, that had begun to change over this incident with Iran, and very much Iran is now the villain of the peace. That obviously is quite useful for the Israeli leadership, who have been facing this pressure, recasting things that way. So is that enough for the Israeli government as things are, you know, a satisfactory turn of events, which could give them the kind of diplomatic ballast which could help them to continue with what they, you know, the aims that they've set on, and that they will not push the confrontation with Iran that much further? But as I say, that's one possibility. The other is that, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu has essentially been denouncing and declaiming about Iran for years and years and years. A huge part of his political brand is that Iran, especially its potential of developing a nuclear weapon, is the enemy, not just in the Middle East, but in the world. So will he take this opportunity to have a real hit against Iran at a moment when his Western allies may not be that opposed to what he does? It's very difficult. I mean, we had, in as you'd expect, in the immediate aftermath, amongst the denunciations of Iran, also the other thing that, you know, came from all capitals in the West, in the Middle East, was calls for utmost restraint. I mean, that particular phrase, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, all of those countries used exactly those words. And essentially the same message has been coming from the US and from the West. And that utmost restraint is meant to apply to both Iran and Israel and the other, you know, the proxies, the Hezbollahs, the Houthis, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a message right now that is directed mostly at Israel, because, you know, in this very dangerous game of brinkmanship that it's involved with, it's up to Israel really to make the next move.
Couple of minutes, just the long-running situation with Iran you've outlined. Obviously, the focus has been so on the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. But what was it that would have led to the strike in Syria that Israel is believed to have made on the Iranian diplomatic mission there? What prompted that in particular?
Well, I think you have to see it, you know, as something that has been happening time and time again. I mean, Israel has been mounting attacks inside in Damascus and other parts of Syria for years and years. I mean, it sees it as a way to hit Iran quite hard, because Iran, as you know, has been a key supporter of President Assad. Its military advisors, its members of Revolutionary Guards, have been there throughout, essentially keeping President Assad in power, with Russia as well. So it's been an opportunity for Israel to do that. And also, Israel sees it as important, because weapons go through Syria to Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah obviously is hostile on the northern border to Israel. And since October 7th, we've seen that, conflict build and build. So, it wasn't something that came out of the blue. Israel had carried out, since October the 7th, some big attacks, some had hit some big fish, Iranians, in Lebanon and in Syria. So this was the biggest challenge. And it was the one, as I say, because it was a diplomatic compound that really pushed Iran into a corner. I mean, I wrote a little piece yesterday on it, in which I kind of suggested, I think there's some truth to this, that Israel in this game wanted to push Iran out of its comfort zone to really exhibit its weakness. I mean, Iran, through its regional proxies, has got a lot of bang for its buck. It doesn't need to invest huge amounts. Hezbollah, Houthis, etc., all have their own agendas, which kind of coincide with Iran, and they carry out attacks and things which are to the benefit of how Iran sees, the regional dynamics.
Right.
And what Israel has done is it's made Iran have to actually do what it didn't want to do, which is face off directly against Israel and not through its proxy. So you could say that
Thank
that
you.
was what this was aimed at.
Thank you, Sebastian Usher.